activate the view screen, and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast.
Interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object battling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It is Thursday, January 16th, 2014, and welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is the Alien Invasion, number 92, temporarily living in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis-St. Paul. I'm Dave Torkus Nelson. Joining me this evening from Wausau, Wisconsin, is Brad Thark, Ludwig, and Anessa Warhoon Moines from Denton, Texas. I got this one because you were talking about it in pre-show, Anessa. These are all names from the Princes of Mars, right?
They're all hordes of the green Martians from the Princes of Mars, but yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'll get that right next time.
Gosh, Dave.
Hey, how you guys?
No, you did pretty good.
How you guys doing? We are back. We're back.
We are back.
A lot has happened since.
It's been a long time.
A lot. It seems like a longer period of time just because of all that's happened in the last month. You know? You guys feel that way?
Yes.
Yes.
See, Anessa just leaves. It's so funny. When she talks.
I'm like, bye, guys. No, I had to go get the cable because my headset's beeping at me.
Ah, okay. All right. So
I haven't used it in that long. The battery just kind of drained.
So before we get into the podcast, do we want to discuss everything that's gone on since our last show? Just to get it out of the way, get it done with, so we can move on? Kind of like a clean slate?
If you so please.
Well, from the beginning, I'll start with me and my stuff. From the beginning, or from the intro, I said that I'm in the Twin Cities. I'm not in Canada. And it's a long story. It's a long, long story that I don't know if I even want to go into the whole thing. Needless to say, I'm not in Canada. I'm not in
technical
Canada.
Technical difficulties.
Yes. Yes. Technical difficulties. Great way of saying it, Anessa. We'll just go with that.
You're welcome.
But in about a month, I should be there. So this is a temporary. What's the word for it?
Hiccup, hitch.
Hiccup, hitch, detour, possibly.
Bump in the road.
Bump in the road, yep. Can use
a
all
cock
those.
Up.
Yep.
As the English might say.
But I am broadcasting from my parents' house. It's not the house that I grew up in. This is just where they live. I'm staying with my parents for now. So, that's me. How was you guys' last month? You guys's.
You guys is filled with lots and lots of traveling.
Well, tell us. Get into detail here. Come on.
Well, after the semester was over, I went to go visit my parents that live about 7 hours southwest of here. And then I drove back on a Thursday. I flew out the next day for Wisconsin.
Yay!
So I hung out with Brad for about almost 2 weeks, actually, the way everything worked out, because the day that I was supposed to leave was when the polar vortex rolled through, and
damn,
my departure flight
vortex.
Kept getting pushed. The polar vortex! And my departure flight kept getting pushed back, and then eventually it was impossible for me to make my connecting flight. Called Delta, they had a 5 hour or more wait time, so Brad and I drove down to the airport. Got that taken care of, and all the flights were pretty much oversold for like the next couple of days.
Jeez.
And I flew back on Thursday.
Wow.
And even that was oversold, because when I checked in, it gave me the option to like give up my seat to somebody else that was on a waiting list, but I felt like crap, and so I did not go for the free vouchers.
And you have some kind of cold going on too. I'm guessing that's.
I do. I'm pretty sure it's a sinus infection. It feels like the last one I had. So.
See, you got delayed by the polar vortex. I had to drive through the damn polar vortex, so we were both affected in some way.
Yeah, like I saw that you were in like just east of Chicago, and I was like, well, if Dave could get here pretty quick, he could join us for dinner.
Should have.
Because we were in Chicago at the time.
Wow.
But instead, we went and grabbed a sandwich and ended up having a rather lengthy conversation with a couple of old gypsy women.
Cool. That's fun. That's fun stuff. All right.
It was weird. I attract the friendlies, and Brad got to experience it firsthand.
There's nothing wrong. That's the kind of experiences that you can talk about. You can talk about for a long time.
Yes, and I went to the store the other day, and some lady just decided to tell me about, like, her shoes and her grandkids and her bunions when she was a teen and just life story. And then she, like, walks off. I'm like, okay.
All right, so do you guys want to talk about what we're here for, which is aliens?
Maybe. Oh, we're here for aliens?
Yeah, we are here for aliens.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Sweet, we should do that.
Yeah, this is the show where we talk about aliens, like if they're invading the Earth or any other place that they appear in pop culture, like film, TV, video games, you name it. Plus, we once in a while we'll get some real life stuff going on, some science, and we talk about it in a few different ways. The news, the creature feature, that's the spotlight of a certain kind of alien that we picked out, and then our picks for the week. And if you ever want to watch us live, we record the show pretty much every Thursday now that we're back. Hopefully we won't have another month break between shows. So just what you do is follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and you'll get notified as to when we'll be going live on the Google Hangout. So without further ado, do you guys want to start?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
we should
okay,
start.
Yeah.
Let's get on with the news.
In the news.
And I do believe that I have the first story, if I'm not mistaken. So, this is interesting. What if the rest of the alien universe was terrified of humans? Just think about that for a second.
Why would they be scared of us?
There could be a lot of different reasons.
We're so cuddly.
I don't know. You know, we may already have a bad reputation in the universe. From what I've read recently of a couple of stories about aliens holding back technology because of our ways, we may have a bad reputation already. I'm just saying. So, okay. In almost every sci-fi movie worth rewatching, it seems like us humans are always less technologically advanced, dumber, and only serve as a mere speed bump into an alien race, eliminating humans to take over our planet and suck Earth dry of its resources. We're always the weaker ones to the alien wars, or in the alien wars. Well, what if we're not? Tom Scott imagined a scenario where everyone else in the universe was afraid of humans, and it's fantastic. The premise of the video, Danger Humans, is simple. It's a PSA from the Interstellar Safety Council notifying alien races how terrifyingly dangerous and awful humans can be. The video is perfect because it turns basic everyday things that humans do into something much more frightening and completely true, like eating other life forms for sustenance. This is awesome. I have not seen this. Brad, have you? Anessa prepped, right?
I prepped it.
Yeah.
You guys really need to watch the video. It's okay.
Oh, I totally watched it. Okay. I posted it actually on my Facebook page, I think.
This is me not actually reading over the stuff that I'm given, so I apologize. This happens every single time.
It is.
So, Brad and Anessa, why don't you guys just explain the video a little bit more?
Imagine if you've seen Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, this would be something like the excerpt of what you would get from Earth, essentially, for lack of a better phrase, except for in the book it's actually mostly harmless. So
this is really like – this is kind of like propaganda because, you know, I've been following a lot of history stuff recently. Like I listened to a history podcast, and – in the history of wars or in the history of, you know, conflicts between nations, they always exaggerate certain characteristics of the other side, right? So this is kind of like that, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like that. They just basically take things about us that is true, like we need oxygen. We eat other, like you mentioned earlier, we eat other life forms for sustenance.
I didn't realize at this point that oxygen is a corrosive substance. I didn't really think about that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that it was corrosive. Well, iron oxide, duh. But, well, yeah, but I'm
it needs a catalyst, and like with salt, it sheds its electrons and passes it on to the iron, and that's what causes it to rust.
So that's one of the things they point out is that we breathe a corrosive chemical.
Inflammable. I mean,
yeah, no, it's a lot of things, isn't it?
Pure oxygen is flammable, and so yeah, it's just really the way that they list things that would normally be like, oh, humans, they breathe oxygen and they eat all sorts of things like meats and vegetables, and they just kind of put kind of a darker mood on it, even though it's true. Completely true.
This is awesome.
And I could see how that would be terrifying to other species and like, hey guys, just a heads up, watch out for these things called humans.
Well, you could totally...
you may want to go around them when exploring.
You could totally do this with anything, really, you know? You could... If you were like... I'm trying to think of a good example. Like, just find weaknesses in anything and just exaggerate them, and there you go.
I'm sure you could make, like, a gerbil terrifying.
Yes! Perfect! Yes, perfect! I like that. Good point.
So it's just how you present the information and the inflection that you give when you present it. So,
yep.
All right. So we're going to post the links, of course, to this article and to the video in the show notes of the podcast. We'll put them on the YouTube video as well. So if you're watching this afterwards, if you're watching the archived video of this, just look below and you'll find the links to these stories and more.
Cool. It's well worth the watch.
Awesome. You know, and I was just thinking that, you know, propaganda can go both ways too. You can make yourself look better than you actually are too through propaganda. Right?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, you can make yourself look awesome or awful. Just it's all in how you spin it.
Yeah. Cool. All right, I think we should use propaganda to make these podcasts seem cooler than they actually are. One of our viewers or listeners, work on that. Work on a campaign. We should put together a PSA for Galactic Netcasts on how great we are.
We're so awesome.
Because we could do the whole thing, like, the whole, like, do you want to be protected from the alien invasion? Well, Brad, Anessa, and Dave cover that every week on the Alien Invasion podcast. Don't let yourself be caught off guard. Watch the Alien Invasion podcast. It will save your life. All right.
Your life depends on it.
All right. There you go. That's story number one. Let's move on to story number two, and this is Anessa's. Anessa.
It is mine. And apparently scientists have figured out, or rather they have identified some of the unidentified flying objects that are witnessed in the sky, specifically right before earthquakes occur.
I've heard this before. I've read and heard and watched things about this.
Mm-hmm. And, the mysterious lights that flash right before an earthquake, long attributed to just being UFOs, have been determined to be ground lights, according to the Space Reporter. The ground lights are perfectly natural electrical energy that's in no way alien to this world. The study conducted by a team of scientists found that during an earthquake, the stress of rocks grinding against each other generates electric charges, which travels upwards along the nearly vertical geological faults that are common in rift zones. When the charges reach Earth's surface and interact with the atmosphere, they create a glow, reports Scientific American. The study is published in the Seismological Research Letters, January and February issue. Geologist Robert Thorault, lead author of the study, emphasizes that earthquake lights are a real phenomenon. They're not UFOs. They can scientifically be identified or explained, according to the Scientific American. Thorault's team studied 65 cases of earthquakes events that span 400 years with data from dozens of locations. Apart from debunking the UFO myth with this discovery, the study is useful in disaster preparedness. With ground lights as indicators, communities in earthquake-prone locations may get the best cautionary advice by taking the cue and preparing an evacuation plan well ahead of time. Ground lights, however, appear in varied forms. They may appear as floating orbs, which I could see how people would mistake as UFOs.
Yeah, I've heard that. I think that's what I've heard before about this phenomenon. Yeah.
Yeah. That just seem to come from alien spaceships, or they may look like glowing meteor streaks. The variety of these ground lights make it difficult to, quote, read as an earthquake indicator, but scientists insist that the spectacle is so startling that people witnessing the flashes would certainly feel the same urgency of to report sightings. So I just thought that was really cool. Like, it's kind of a bummer that, you know, some of the lights that you don't see aren't actually from outer space. But I think it's neat that they can at least use these lights as a way to possibly predict a potential disaster,
mm-hmm.
or at least, you know, they can be more prepared. They can not just think like, nothing's going to happen, because it might, especially if electricity is being generated by the faults grinding and creating friction. So.
Yeah. I'm surprised that all the lights that we see are not UFOs. They're not alien spacecraft. I'm shocked by that. I thought every single light that we saw was
well, it's not saying that every single light that you see is not, like, suddenly identified, because it's all related to geology. It's just saying that, especially if you're in areas that are more prone to geologic activity, and you see these lights, and then a couple of days later, there is an earthquake, these lights are not because of aliens, they're because of geologic activity.
Well, I think I'm going
seismological to... Seismological activity.
I'm gonna keep the myth in my head, and I'm going to ignore the story completely, and just go with my original thinking that it is aliens in their little UFO spacecraft.
Aww.
Take that, science.
Ignore it. I can't ignore this. That's why I posted the story. I'm like, oh, that's kind of a bummer about debunking some of the UFOs out there, but it's really cool.
Yeah. No, it is neat. I'll give you that. It's a cool indicator. I wonder if they can, like, you know, put like sensors out in susceptible areas, and, you know, use electronics to figure this out as well. You know.
Probably, possibly, maybe. I would think that they would be able to put something out there that could detect any change in the electrical charge of the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm not entirely sure how that would work. But yeah, I'm sure they could probably put them near areas where they have seismographs monitoring the earth.
Yeah.
The ground. And so see if one changes over the other one, then maybe.
Yeah. Anything's possible, especially after I watched a show last night on PBS about the Zeppelins, you know, the dirigibles, the big...
Mm-hmm.
And in World War One, the British used these big, like, concrete... They were almost like conclave-shaped big concrete things on the shores, which would basically bounce the sound of the Zeppelins coming their way and, like, amplify it. And they would, like, use this hose-type deal where they would listen. They would, like... I forget exactly. I'm doing a bad explanation job, but they basically just used acoustics to figure out that these Zeppelins were on their way. It was interesting. So anything is possible.
That is interesting that they... Like, was it something like, not, kind of like sonar, maybe?
Yeah, it was a very, very early sonar-type way of detecting them. Just because it was this big wall, basically, And it was in a certain shape and a certain size, big enough that when the Zeppelins got to a certain distance, that sound would bounce off, and then it was like channeled into like a tube or something like that. And I was shocked at how rudimentary that is, but how effective it is too at the same time.
Huh.
It was cool. All right.
Yeah, that is really cool.
Let us move on here to story number three. But before we do, we would love your feedback, especially since we've been gone this last month. I think all three of us need like a pick-me-up. I think we need some positive reinforcement saying, welcome back, guys. We were really lonely without you. We missed you. We're glad that you're back. Don't ever leave us again for that long.
Please send us letters and sound like you're desperate stalker types. Dear Stalker Diary, it's been 30 days without them. Whatever shall I do? I don't want to live. Please, yes.
Hopefully they're
letter.
Still living.
Yes.
Please don't send that letter.
And hopefully we still have listeners. That's what I'm worried about, you know?
I'm sure we've got at least Jason and John.
Jason and John.
Australia.
All we need is Jason.
He sent us a couple of messages over the break.
Yes, I heard from Crazy John down there in
Crazy John, dude. He makes pictures of like himself as a Guten.
That's really awesome.
Yeah, no, that's why I said Crazy John.
I want to know what he uses to kind of pinch and poke his face to make it do that.
Oh, maybe it's actually I don't know what he has, but I think iPhone's photo booth does that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different apps.
I only have an Android, so I don't have.
I'm sure there's an app for that.
I'm sure there's an app for that, Brad.
are you sure?
Yes, positive.
Okay.
All right. So if you want to do crazy faces, crazy Guten faces, or just want to write us a letter, you can do that. We don't have a physical address, although you can use our email address, which is galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. That's galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Or call our voicemail number. It is 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. And I just have to say that modern technology is so awesome because Galactic Netcasts Central has moved all over the place. And we can still do all these things. We can still take your voicemails. We can still take your emails, no matter where I am. Because if the listener doesn't know, I record our shows on my little computer here. And I take all the emails. I take all the voicemails.
For a brief second, I was hoping you were going to say My Little Pony.
No, that would be weird.
Recording it on My Little Pony.
Yes, that's my nickname for my computer, Brad, is My Little Pony.
My Little Pony.
Yes.
Dave's a brony?
No, I'm not. But friendship is magic.
Friendship is magic.
So again, let's review. GalacticNetcasts@gmail.com. Trying to get away from that as fast as I can. 805-328-3966. GalacticNetcasts@gmail.com, and we thank you in advance for your awesome feedback. All right, Brad, final story. Brad, you're bringing up the rear. What do you got?
That took a turn. All right. Iranian news agency says, the U.S. is secretly run by Nazi space aliens.
Oh, hang on. Before you continue, I got a sound for that here. Okay, say that again. Say that headline again.
All right. Iranian news agency says the U.S. is secretly run by Nazi space aliens.
Okay.
There we go. Inception sound. On Sunday, the hardline semi-official Fars News dropped one of its biggest bombshells yet. The United States government has been secretly run by a shadow government of space aliens since 1945. The alien government is based out of Nevada and had previously run Nazi Germany. it adds for timelessness that the country, for timeliness, this completely different thing, that the controversial NSA programs are actually a tool for the aliens to hide their presence on Earth and their secret agenda for global domination. This is...
Okay, this is the last time, sorry.
This is all asserted as incontrovertible fact with no caveats. As proof that the aliens were secretly behind the Nazis, the report explains that Germany built hundreds of submarines towards the end of the war, far more than what would be necessary with mere human technology.
I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
It does not explain why aliens with access to interstellar travel built subs that were so grossly incapable against the British Navy. Here we go with facts and stuff.
Yeah, who needs those?
Or why all-powerful extraterrestrials were unable to help the Nazis resist an invasion by Allied forces that are mere cavemen relative to their own technology. After losing the war, the aliens apparently installed themselves as the secret force behind the United States government. President Obama is said to be a tool of the aliens, of course, though anti-alien factions within the U.S. government are fighting to topple him. Their present aim? To install global surveillance system that will somehow allow them to finally impose a one-world government and enslave humanity.
I'm really surprised, Brad, that this story is not from the Weekly World News. I'm surprised.
Yeah, like, I pulled this off of the Washington Post blog, like one of the blogs.
Wow.
The Post. I saw this and I'm like, I have to.
Wow, the Post has really gone downhill.
Here's the capper for this whole thing. Fars's main source for the story is supposedly – okay, who do you think it is?
Anessa, go first. I can't think of anything.
NSA leaker Edward Snowden.
That's awesome.
Who has waited until now to reveal that the real reason for all those NSA programs is – sorry, hang on. I got to get my hair up. It's aliens, man.
I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens.
So, yeah, there you go.
So, not only is the NSA spying on us, but the NSA is aliens who are spying on us.
The aliens that helped the Nazis lose World War II are actually behind our government, and they're trying to impose a one-world government because the Nazi Germany thing didn't work out.
Okay.
And I know Dave was wanting to talk about this, but the story was really long, like really long. But they said that the former Canadian Defense Minister, Paul Hellyer, confirmed this, but he hasn't actually made an official statement to them.
Oh, we'll be talking about,
about
that.
Like,
we'll be talking about that next week.
So, preview for next week.
Yeah, he's got all kinds of revelations. So we'll be discussing them in detail. Definitely. Yeah.
That is a hilarious story.
So I'm disappointed that there was no mention of the moon in this story. Like a secret base on the moon. Or under the
this
ice.
This is an iron siding.
What?
Yeah.
I said this is an iron sky.
Yeah, the secret base
Nazis.
Is on the dark side of the moon.
Yep.
You guys have both seen that movie, right?
There's no dark side of the moon, really. As a matter of fact, it's all dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just the light bouncing off.
Pink Floyd fans? Anybody?
Yeah.
Anybody?
No.
Yes.
Yep.
There's a planetarium show.
All right. There you go. Nazis, aliens, NSA... Everything that you'd want into one story is right there. Great.
And more.
Yeah.
Just needed the one story for the show. We didn't need anything else.
Yeah, we could have just had this one story and could have talked about this the whole show.
I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens.
Hey, you know what? They may be partially right. You know, we could be. We could be fooling ourselves. There may be aliens that are in charge of our government. Who knows? Who knows?
I saw that movie with Robo Hitler in the center of the earth. It could happen.
Yeah, anything could happen. We're just fooling ourselves, people. There are aliens.
With that Busey boy.
Yeah, that was
his
another
big shiny teeth.
Great one. Oh, by the
like a shark.
By the way, I watched part of that Atlantic Rim movie, and it was terrible. I couldn't watch 10 minutes of it. I had to turn it off. It was terrible. Terrible.
Terrible.
All right, there you go. That's the news. Leave us feedback. GalacticNetcasts@gmail.com. The voicemail 805-328-3966. All right, let's move on to the creature feature.
And now it's time for creature feature.
And Anessa prepped the show this week, and it's her creature feature. What do you got for us?
I have the Green Martians of Barsoom, or I guess they're from the Princess of Mars book by Edgar Rice Burroughs. And if you happen to have seen John Carter or the Craptacular Asylum version of A Princess of Mars, then you would have seen some version of these alien creatures. They are, of course, as the name would lead you to believe, they are green. But they're really tall, monstrous people who stalk the Dead Sea bottoms of Barsoom, which we call Barsoom Mars. They are intelligent and capable of organizing themselves into a society, but they are almost to man all brute and cruel. So they're mean. The largest of the Martian races, the males stand up to 15 feet tall, and the females up to 12 feet. They have green skin, small antenna-like ears above the eyes, and large tusks. In the males, these tusks extend upwards to the level of the eyes, and the eyes themselves are large and wide-set with snowy white sclera and blood-red irises. The eye is capable of moving independently of the other, so they don't have to look at the same thing with both eyes.
Oh, so they got a
they're like frogs or bird eyes or something.
Yeah, they got a pretty good peripheral going on there.
They do.
Yeah.
Green women differ in the fact that their skin color is a bit lighter, their tusks extend up to the level of their antenna, and they also have vestigial fingernails, so they have some remnants of fingernails. Like all the other Martian humanoids, they lay eggs. Newly laid eggs are described as being the size of a goose egg, and the young take up to 5 years to hatch.
Young are
miniature replicas of the adults, standing 3 to 4 feet in height when hatched, with yellowish-green skin and darkens as they age. Yeah, it takes up to 5 years. And
wow.
The thing with them is the Green Martians value, like, brutishness, and they absolutely hate any what they consider weaknesses as far as feelings and kindness and whatnot. And so what they do is they monitor, or at least they pay attention to the females, and the females that fall within their guidelines, they allow for them to lay the eggs. And then, so like a bunch of eggs end up getting laid, and then they choose basically the best ones. They have a council that go and pick out the best eggs. And they take those eggs and put them hidden away from the city that they live in like a little incubator where they hang out for 5 years. And they go out there once in a while to check on things. But for the most part, the eggs remain undisturbed. And then the remaining eggs that they didn't choose, they're on their own. And they probably don't make it because of other predators and whatnot.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You have warring hordes that will go and attack each other's incubators And so that's like 5 years down the drain if they destroy the eggs before they can hatch. But anyway.
No, there was a scene I remember seeing in John Carter with a room full of these eggs. So.
Yeah, it was towards the beginning when he first encounters the incubator. And it's the same thing in the book, and like I'll mention this later, but I kind of realized that I don't remember much about the movies. I remember the beginning and the ending. In the middle, I don't know what happened.
I remember that cute little dog, that dog creature.
Woola, yes.
Yeah, he's cute.
But, I know, like in the book, you really like love Woola, and he's sweet. So he's in the book, so yay.
Cool.
So yeah, and the green Martians don't really dig clothes. They'll wear ornaments and stuff to show their ranks and whatnot. At least the males will. And, of course, they are barbaric. They have no art and no written language, and they've never constructed any structure beyond necessary incubators. Their sense of humor is cruel, and they laugh at death and suffering. She chopped his head off.
Die.
They are constantly at war with each other, and the red people, which would be like Deja Thoris, like the princess of Mars, they detest mining and physical labor, and all things of value are produced by the females of the species. So the ladies do all the work. Concerning law, they make new laws only as it becomes necessary, a new law for each emergency. They are unfettered by precedent in the administration of justice, and customs have been handed down by ages of repetition. But the punishment for ignoring a custom is a matter for individual treatment by a jury of the culprit's peers. So usually they end up having them just, like, fight
to
other
the death.
Monsters or people to the death. And then they laugh about it. So, yeah, there's actually a lot to the Green Martians. But then if I start talking more about the Green Martians, and you end up hearing more about the story.
Now, is this like the Hulk, where there was the Red Hulk, the Gray Hulk, and the Green Hulk? There's other color Martians in the universe of this universe.
Honestly, so far, I've only read A Princess of Mars, which I just finished tonight. You've basically got the Red Martians, which are like us.
Oh, okay. I get it. Okay, I got it.
And then you have the green Martians, which are like the Tharks that you see mostly in the movie. I don't think they really showed other of the hordes of the green Martians.
Yeah, I don't think so. I was just thinking
I'm trying to think, and I don't think they did. They mainly focused on the Tharks and Tharse Tarkas.
Yeah.
So, it's mainly like those two types of races that I can think of. And of course, you know, the red people look like us, and then the green people have two arms, two legs, and then like two, they're not really arms or legs, but they can be used as either.
Just miscellaneous limbs.
Miscellaneous limbs. You need them as feet. You can crawl around on them. Need them as an extra hand. You can use that.
If you fall down, the extra limb can stop your fall. Whoa! Thank God for that extra limb.
Pretty much. So yeah, they've got their extra limbs. They're really tough fighters. They're really good at aiming, and when it comes to shooting things, I've discovered in the book, they have awesome aim.
Cool.
But yeah, they're just really, they really go by the rules, like the planet in general. Like if you make a promise, that's your promise. If you break it, well, then you're probably going to die because of it.
They sound very much like other traditional science fiction aliens that have a lot of, like, they remind me of Klingons, but I don't want to say Klingons because these guys came first before all those other ones, because this is an old, old story, right?
I mean, it was written in the
1800s,
early 1900s, late 1900s.
Yeah. So these aliens could be the template for a lot of other aliens that followed them, pretty much.
Well, you know, they make a lot of reference, or they, a lot of things make a nod to the Green Martians. I don't have the page up in front of me, but I remember there was a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen issue where they had a Green Martian in the background. Just different shows and comics and cartoons and stuff, they'll make reference and they'll make a nod to these aliens, because I think just his books and dealing with the aliens had so much influence, and you know, people really sparked their imagination about the possibility of what other alien life forms could look like.
Really set a precedent, and something can be said about being the first too. I mean, this was really the first, you know, real true science fiction story that took place in another planet like that, with other creatures like that.
Yeah, it was written in 1911.
Okay, yeah. That's way. That's early days for science fiction.
I think it was published in 1917.
Because a lot of the stuff that, like Jules Verne, this wasn't Jules Verne, was it?
No, this was Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But it was around the same time period, I think.
A lot of the
I think Jules Verne was first.
Jules Verne was a lot of like fantastical stuff that happened on this planet.
Right.
I think this
is one of the Nautilus and whatnot.
This was one of the first ones that actually took you off the planet. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. So. I'm sure that we'll hear more of the story in your pick later on, right?
Oh, yeah, you will. I'm just focusing on the aliens for now. The Green Martians, anyway.
That's cool. I just love the fact that a lot of times whoever preps the show will have a theme, you know? Like, I'll often have themes whenever I prep, you know. The creature feature will probably be related to my pick somehow, or a story, so.
Yeah, and it just so happened that tonight I actually finished it. I finished the story maybe, like, 5 or 10 minutes before doing the show. And I wasn't sure that I would, but I'm like, well, if I finish it tonight, that's going to be my pick, and I finished it.
See, that was motivation for you to finish. That's
awesome. I know! I finally finished the story. Yay!
When did you actually start reading it? Like, what year was it?
Oh, I guess it would have been like, what, a year and a half ago?
So 2012.
Whenever we did A Princess of Mars.
Oh, yeah.
For the Sci-Fi Film School. Whenever that happened, it was shortly after, because James gave me the book.
Oh, I think I
remember. And I started reading it, like, 2 or 3 times, and I would read the first couple of chapters. I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. And then, like, I would get busy doing other stuff and just forget about it. And I felt so bad, because I've had his book for, like, the past year and a half. So I think back in December, I was like, here, James, here's your book back. And I looked on Amazon, and it was available as a free download. I'm like, I'm totally going to download it and read it. So
cool.
I started rereading it again last month.
Did you start from the beginning, or did you pick up where you left off?
Oh, yeah. I started from the beginning because it had been so long. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to start afresh and have everything fresh in my mind and not like, wait, what happened? And I have to go back and reread it anyway. So I read some of it while on the plane to Wisconsin, and I read some of it in Wisconsin. And so that helped, too.
You know what I'd like to do sometime? I would like to renew my Audible membership. And did you know that you can do this with books? Like, if you are reading it through the Kindle app, that you can, if you have it also on Audible, you can pick up where you left off reading with the Whisper Sync. Is that what it's called?
I know with Kindle, yeah, it's got the Whisper Sync. And so if I'm reading it on my iPad, I can pick up where I left off on my phone or my Kindle, and I just stuck with the Kindle.
And I know for some, that you can actually listen to the Audible version too while you're reading it. Like, it'll know where you left off on the audio version, and then you'll start reading. That would be a very interesting experience to listen and read.
Yeah, some books do offer like the text to sound or text to speech, I think is what they call it. But I don't think this was one of them.
Yeah.
Because I tried to find that feature on this book and it didn't give it to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, it'll pick up where you left off. So if you were just like listening while you were doing the dishes or something, and then you want to sit down and actually read, it'll be like, oh, were you on this page?
That's the best of both worlds.
Which I think is really awesome.
Yeah. All right. There you go. We'll have the link to learn more about the Green Martians on the show notes. If you're watching us on YouTube, we'll have it in the description below. All right. You guys ready for your picks?
I think so.
Okay, Brad, you've been silent for a while. So this is your chance. This is your chance.
I haven't had soda or, I mean, caffeine's not like a huge thing, but it's a little bit of a pick-me-up, and I don't know. I'm just really, really tired. I don't know what's going on.
Well, this is your chance to liven up a little bit.
Okay.
I'm sure that you're passionate. You're very passionate about your pick. You have a lot to say. Let's get some energy up on this. Let's talk about your pick. What's your pick?
All right. Let's do this thing. Bam. All right. The movie I saw was Escape from Planet Earth.
That's a great name.
That's right. It's a great 3D animated. I say great because I did enjoy it, and I think it's a good movie for kids and parents to watch together, because there's little jokes that parents will get that, you know, the kids won't necessarily catch, and it's a very, very interesting tale. I'm going to give you a little bit of a write-up on it from IMDb. On the planet Bob, spelled B-A-A-B, admired astronaut Scorch Supernova, who is voiced by Brendan Fraser, is a national hero to the blue alien population, the Bobites, I guess. A master of daring rescues, Scorch pulls off astonishing feats with the quiet aid of his nerdy, by-the-rules brother, Gary, who is voiced by Rob Corddry, head of mission control at BASA. That's with a B. When BASA's no-nonsense chief, Lena, voiced by Jessica Alba, informs the brothers of an SOS from a notoriously dangerous planet, which they call the Black Planet. It's the planet that no alien ever comes back from. Scorch rejects Gary's warnings and bounds off for yet another exciting mission. But when Scorch finds himself caught in a fiendish trap set by the evil Shanker, who is voiced by William Shatner, it's up to scrawny, risk-averse Gary to do the real rescuing. As the interplanetary stakes rise to new heights, Gary is left to save his brother, his planet, his beloved wife, Kira, voiced by Sarah Jessica Parker, and their adventure-hungry son, Kip.
So is the Black Planet, is that Earth?
Yes.
Kind of goes back to the first story that we had.
Yeah, it does. It ties up nicely. When I heard you going through the first story, I'm like, oh, well, I chose wisely.
That's awesome.
It very much plays on Area 51, where this activity takes place. It reminded me a lot of a previous pick that I had, which was Planet 51. Mm-hmm. I think it was. Crap, hang on. Yes, it was Planet 51, which is a movie that we got for Alex's birthday party. And that same animation style, that same kind of tongue-in-cheek sort of humor. I think it was done by the same studio, but don't quote me on that. I didn't look that up.
This isn't Pixar, is it?
No.
Okay.
Definitely not Pixar. I don't know what it is about Pixar. There's a definite feel to a Pixar film, and I don't know what it is. But if they bottled it, boy, they could make a killing. But no, this is not a Pixar film. Um, you get a sense of it starts off with kind of an introduction to the two brothers, Scorch and Gary. And Gary reminds me a bit of, speaking of Pixar, of Buzz Lightyear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whole dashing, daring hero who's slightly clueless. that's Scorch to a T, and Gary is the brains. They say mission control, but they're both in communication with each other while Scorch is actually performing the mission that he's been sent out to do. So this mysterious signal somehow appears, and Bassa Chief tells Scorch that he and Gary are supposed to investigate. And wackiness ensues. Scorch is captured, and Gary feels responsible for his capture due to things that happen in the film, and he feels that he needs to help save his brother. And they all learn and grow and learn a little bit more about themselves. A lot of positive messages, a lot of good humor, nothing offensive, no language issues. So it's a good family space alien film for everybody to watch.
But it's one of those stories, it's one of those animated films that adults will appreciate as well, right? Not just the kids.
Yeah, I really think so, because there are a number of messages like
don't eat
Gary's
the yellow
wife.
Snow.
Not Lena. God, I just finished watching this film. Kira, sorry. she was a she worked for BASA as a test pilot, but she became a stay-at-home mom when Kip was born. So there's a she's actually kind of a badass. And Gary is like, oh, I don't think we should do that. And she just kind of plows ahead because she's got that – she's a risk taker.
Yeah, yeah.
But once she had Kip, she really kind of put that aside. But when she needed to do it, she could. So it was really, really kind of interesting to see that dichotomy, those two different people coming together to form a relationship. And you see different aspects of these characters that you didn't expect to see. It's just really kind of cool. So –
all right.
Sounds a very, very fun film, and George Lopez does a voice. Jane Lynch the voice.
Quite the cast there on this film.
Yeah,
yeah. I was just thinking that.
And I can't remember who the other person was now who did a voice. But anyways, a very good cast. Well done. Very enjoyable family film. So there you go.
I was just thinking about animated films. What do you guys think is the first real breakthrough animated film that had a lot of big stars voicing characters? Was it the Lion, Lion King? Do you think it was that, or
are you talking 3D or
no? Any
just animated in
animated
general?
In general that had stars voicing the characters. I'm not, as you guys know, I'm not really a big animated person, but I just thought that was interesting to think about, you know, what was the breakthrough film that really, because every one of these now has big stars, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they do have a lot of big stars. I'm trying to think, and I just keep thinking of, like, Disney movies, and so you've got, like, Aladdin that has Robin Williams in it.
Well, maybe that was it. Maybe that was the first one. I don't know.
That era of Disney animated film was so huge.
Yeah.
And yeah, they had a lot of stars. I'm trying to think.
I can't think of what they were in the timeline of things.
But really before that, though, there wasn't a lot. I mean, big stars really didn't voice characters in animated or cartoons, animation or cartoons.
It was kind of considered beneath people to do that, actually, or actors and actresses.
Yep.
And now it seems like they're all for doing.
Yeah, it's become respectable.
Animated movies.
All right. Well, Brad looks that up. Anessa, do you want to talk about your pick?
Yeah, I get to talk more about A Princess of Mars.
Well, that's good. We want to hear more.
Yep. A Princess of Mars is a book by Edgar Rice Burroughs. As we mentioned earlier, it was written in 1911, published in 1917. And it's actually the first of a series of books known as The Barsoom. And I think, I want to say that there's 11 books in this series. I probably won't read the 11 books in this series.
That's a lot.
It is a lot.
But weren't they, like, smaller? Weren't they, like, more...
Yeah, well, they were serials.
Okay.
And they read like serials. So, like, all the chapters kind of leave you hanging for the next thing. And they kind of, like, wrap things up a little bit. But yep. Then there's, like, a little something, like, oh, what's going to happen to John Carter next? Or where's he going to go next sort of thing. And these were published in magazines, and then they're eventually collected and put into a like actual books. But yeah, they were serials in magazines. but A Princess of Mars, if no one's ever seen John Carter or anything, John Carter is a Civil War veteran, and he finds himself... he finds himself escaping from a tribe of Indians, and he ends up hiding out in this cave. And he passes out in this cave and wakes up and finds himself on Mars. And when he's on Mars, and, you know, for you and me, we get up, we walk around. Well, apparently the human body on Mars reacts differently to the gravitational pull and the Martian atmosphere. And it gives humans, or at least John Carter, the ability to, like, bounce really high. Mm-hmm. So it took him a while to learn how to walk and not, like, flail about trying to get from point A to point B. but when he ends up on Mars, he ends up being captured and held prisoner by the Green Martians of the Thark Horde. And it was really interesting in that at one point he's, like, defending himself, and he ends up killing one of these Green Martians, but he's a prisoner. And later on, he ends up getting fitted with these metals and stuff, and ends up getting these, like, silk sheets, and, like, people, like, the Martian women come and they kind of hang out and, like, help around the house, basically. And he's in, like, this really interesting position where he's a prisoner, but he's now, like, in the ranks of the Green Martians, because when you kill a Green Martian, then you acquire their rank and their wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kind of ends up working his way up along the Martian order, but he's still a prisoner for a good chunk of the book.
Huh. Yeah, that is
which is really weird.
Yeah.
So they have, like, this respect for him, and they're like, but you're still a prisoner, but you have a little bit of say, so we'll let you run around the town, but as soon as you go outside the city, you're in trouble, mister. So, yeah. But anyway, he comes across this princess of Helium, Deja Thoris, and he falls in love with her. And eventually it just becomes a fight for not just, like, his freedom, but, like, her freedom, because she ends up getting captured by the Green Martians. And then a different horde, or not necessarily horde, but clan of the Red Martians. And then eventually they have this machine on Mars that helps generate the atmosphere, and something happens with that, and so they have to try to fix that too. So there's a lot going on in the book that they have to try to fight through and try to conquer, and there's just a lot of fighting and swashbuckling action and whatnot. So
now, Anessa, a little science here. At the time that this was written, did we know much about the actual planet of Mars? Like, that there would be the possibility of human or of life there, or what?
Was it Lowell?
The reason I ask is the whole machine to make the atmosphere. That seems like they knew a little something about the planet already. that it didn't really have a proper atmosphere.
Yeah, well, they didn't know a whole lot about Mars. Because I don't know why I was thinking it was Lowell. Or maybe Lowell was one of the guys. But they initially thought that there were canals on Mars. Like, people physically built these channels to channel water. They weren't like rivers or anything. Like, they physically built these channels. And so I can't think of the astronomer. It might have been Schiaparelli that wrote a book about the Martian channels. But for a while, we actually thought that, you know, there was an atmosphere, or at least, yeah, we thought that there was an atmosphere, and there were these channels on Mars that Martians used to, you know, irrigate and grow crops and whatnot on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't really know any better because we couldn't go up there to see, and we didn't have, you know, very powerful telescopes or anything.
Yeah.
So, we had to use the telescopes that we had to work with. And, so yeah, I don't think they really knew a whole lot. I think they had a general idea about, you know, approximately how long maybe the year lasted, how long a Martian day was, and how it compared to, like, an Earth day and Earth year.
Mm-hmm.
But they, I'm not sure if they, well, I guess they probably would have been able to calculate the rate at which the moons rose and set and stuff. So you had Phobos and Deimos, the Martian moons. But aside from, like, those little observations, I don't think there was a whole lot that was known about the red planet.
Okay.
Yeah, they just, I guess they had figured that at that point it's a red planet, so it's probably mostly dead. And you can tell this in Burroughs' writing, that he pretty much talks about how there used to be these big, plentiful seas, and they've dried up, and they just now have, like, this moss-like vegetation growing at the bottom, and the water resources are limited beyond, like, what's at the South Pole and North Pole.
Yep.
Like that polar ice caps and stuff. So I think they were able to at least assess that general bit of information. But I guess they didn't know exactly how dense the atmosphere was.
Okay.
Or if it would be able to sustain life. So, but I think he did, like, a really good job, like, guessing that, oh, it probably doesn't have an atmosphere that would be able to sustain itself or sustain life without some sort of help.
Yeah.
And so he created this machine that is supposed to help generate oxygen that can provide and sustain life. In the book, it's supposed to be at least for, like, another 1,000 years or so.
Hmm.
And there's an issue with the machine where it goes from being, like, 1,000 years to just a couple of days, like 3 or 4 days. And so there's this panic, and they have, you know, they're trying to figure out a way to get past the barriers to this machine, because it's a very well-protected machine, because they don't want it falling into the hands of just anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to fight while growing weak, because the amount of oxygen and stuff in the atmosphere is starting to decrease, and so people aren't able to fully function at their best at that point in the book. But I really recommend it. It's not a very thick book. It's maybe a couple hundred pages at the most.
Plus, it's free, right? I mean, on Amazon, it's
yeah,
free.
If you have a smart device, Android, iPad, whatever, you can download the Kindle app and download it for free. You can go to Project Gutenberg, because it's free there. Actually, the most of the books in the series are free.
Because they're public domain, right? That's why?
Huh?
Because they're public domain, right?
Right, but there were, I think, 3 or 4 books that somewhere along the way the copyright got renewed.
Oh.
And so those are not free. But the other ones, because they were published before 1923, I think is the date, the copyright is no longer on them, at least in the United States. And so they fall into the Project Gutenberg thing, and they're available for free, public domain.
All right. We'll have the link.
I recommend it on me.
Yeah, we'll have the link where you can get it on Amazon on the show notes. And cool. Good to get some positive stuff about that story. It's that I think I was one of the few people that actually liked John Carter. The one that just
I enjoyed
I really
too.
Liked John Carter. I was really disappointed that it didn't get a wider reception.
Yeah.
But I think just the timing that it came out and the marketing that Disney did was really crap.
Yep.
And so I think it was doomed from the word go, but I actually really enjoyed that movie as well.
Yeah. Too bad for what's the actor's name? He was in a couple of bombs. He was also in
oh yeah, I can't think of his name now.
Battleship.
But yeah,
I thought Battleship was not that bad either.
Yeah. It was entertaining. It was an action movie. It's like what you expect. You have aliens, you have things exploding.
Yeah.
I felt bad for the director, Andrew Stanton, who did Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
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 But they just bad marketing. I will say that in the book, there's a character that really frustrates the hell out of me. I don't believe she was in the movie. Either that or I blocked her out. But it was a green Martian named Sarkoja. And she was just a big snitch and a big bitch.
A stitch bitch. All right.
She was snitches get bitch. Stitches.
So, yeah, I was really frustrated with her in the book. And I'm like, oh, why won't she just die?
Termagerd.
So there's that. Be warned.
All right. Look out for her. All right. Let's wrap up the picks with mine. Speaking of actual bad movies, this is pretty bad. It's not the worst thing I've seen, but it's not even close to the best thing I've seen either. It's called Stranded, a 2013 film directed by, okay, get this, and I did not plan this. This is just an observation that I made through doing research. Directed by Roger Christian, written by Christian Pierce Bentley, and Roger Christian, and starring Christian Slater. I don't know what the hell's up with all the Christians. It's just a weird coincidence.
Christian Slater's alive?
I know. He was actually pretty good in this. Also, there was Michael Thorault. He's been in a lot of stuff, and I can't remember the main thing he's known for. I think a lot of TV. You would recognize him if you saw him.
Probably.
Yeah. Stranded. It's basically about this moon base that gets hit by a meteor shower. Everything gets damaged. First scene, it's just chaos. You know, they're losing atmosphere. There's destruction, mayhem. And one of the things that falls through a hole in the base is one of the meteor rocks. So the rock gets taken to be examined. The doctor, I don't know why the doctor was doing this, but the doctor opens it up and he discovers these spores inside. And when these spores are exposed to light, they multiply at a great rate. And another character, Ava, takes one of the spores to be examined and she cuts her finger at the same time. And she's like trying to hide it. She doesn't want the doctor to know that she cut her finger. So the spore gets inside her, causes her to have a pregnancy, causes her to create a new life from the spore, and then this creature gets born and runs off, scurries off, and then one of the other characters comes in, and this creature bites this other character and uses his DNA to make a copy of him. So there's an alien running around that looks exactly like this one character. And basically, it's one of those cases of, at the very end, the alien gets on the escape pod. He gets to Earth. But then at the same time, the two characters that are left, the two humans that are left, they get rescued by this rescue shuttle. And the last thing that they show is on planet Earth, this alien has crash landed, and the people that are on the rescue shuttle are telling the guy in charge that this thing is dangerous, watch out, and that was it. I pretty much, that's the movie. If you wanted to see it, I spoiled it for you. I'm sorry, but it's
Spoilers.
Not it's not really worth your time to watch anyway, so.
I'll just tell you what happens so you don't have to suffer.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Dave, for taking one for us.
Yeah, it's a public
one for the team.
Public service, my friends. Public service. That's what it is. So that's the movie that I saw as my pick, Stranded. Again, directed by Roger Christian, written by Christian Pierce, and starring Christian Slater. It's a Christian affair here on the sci-fi film, or the alien invasion. All right.
All the Christians.
Yes. There you go. Those are our picks. You will find the links to those on our picks page at galacticnetcasts.com. You can either buy them, or in S's case, you can get hers for free. So check it out on our website, galacticnetcasts.com. Just click on the picks page and enjoy our picks, or in my case, don't enjoy it because it's not that good.
Terrible.
All right, so that's pretty much going to do it for this edition of the Alien Invasion. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Stitcher. Just go to the website, galacticnetcast.com/contact, subscribe. You can find us on iTunes, all that jazz, and follow us on the social networks, too. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. Voicemail number, 805-328-3966. Email us at galacticnetcast@gmail.com. And I got an email mid-show from my family who are all watching us tonight.
Aww. Hi, Dave's family.
The Burgoynes and the Nelsons were watching us. They were, I'm sure, crowded around the computer watching us. All seven of them were watching us at once. So,
our biggest audience yet.
Yes.
Woo-hoo!
All right, that's going to do it. We'll talk to you guys next time. Of course, oh, I almost forgot. Final thoughts, right? We do that on the show. We do final thoughts, right?
Yes, we do.
It's been so long, maybe. I forgot. Okay, what are your final thoughts?
Well, I saw yesterday that John Dobson died. He is the creator or the designer of the Dobsonian telescope, which is basically a Newtonian telescope on a Dobsonian mount. And it's very popular for amateur astronomers because when you can make them, like, the mounts fairly portable, and they're very easy to maneuver, unlike some of the other mounts that telescopes sit on. This one, you just basically, oh, I want to move it over here, let me twist it. Oh, I need for it to go higher, let me pull it. You know, it's very, like, push-pull, move side to side sort of thing. So, yeah, he passed away, I think, yesterday, or at least I saw it yesterday.
So his invention kind of brought astronomy to the masses, right? Kind of.
It did. It was an affordable way to look at the stars in a very effective way, because Newtonian telescopes are very, very simple telescopes, but they're very good telescopes to use to look at the stars, and it was more widely accessible and easier to use, less complicated, a no-frills way if you just want to stargaze.
Cool.
So,
well, not cool because he's dead. But
kind of sad.
But yeah,
the telescope's cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, not so cool that he's dead. I know a lot of people didn't agree with his views on cosmology, but I never looked to see what they were. So
okay,
he was a little bit of a kook in that regards.
Well, different strokes for different folks, I guess.
Yeah, but he invented the telescope mount. That's very popular and easy to use, and that's a shame that he passed, but it's cool that he left that for us.
So. Yeah, what a legacy.
Yeah.
All right, Brad, what's your final thought?
Some of the alien movies that I really want to see aren't going to come here fast enough, unfortunately.
What are some of them?
The one that I'm really kind of looking forward to is Interstellar.
Interstellar looks awesome. Also, that movie with what's-her-face, who is the Predator alien.
Oh, Jupiter Rising?
No.
Oh, Jupiter Ascending? Sorry.
No, it's a different one. She's wandering around Europe, like, killing humans to eat.
Oh, Scarlett Johansson?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I forget what it's called, though.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a few alien movies coming out this year. I don't think as many as last year, but we got a few.
Yeah, we have some.
Yeah.
We got that going for us.
All right, is that it? We done?
Yeah, I just have little to no patience, like a 5-year-old child in a candy store for upcoming sci-fi films. So there you go.
Just be patient.
That's my report.
Just go to bed, Brad. They'll be here before you know it.
I feel like I could sleep until the next movie that I want to see comes out.
All right, do that. Good night.
Good night. Oh,
right.
I'll miss you.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Hey, we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.